Okay, a few reminders before we get started. First and foremost, I want to point out that we have several handouts today, along with a PowerPoint that is on our webpage. But one of the handouts is an Excel file, so you see it on the screen on the right-hand column under Dr. Aldrich's picture. And it's an Excel file. I'm going to leave that there for just a short while. And if you want to download it, you're able to. Just click on the file and click download file. It's an Excel file that I could not put on our webpage. If it's gone before you get a chance, then you can just email me and I'll get it to you later. But I wanted to point that out first. The few other reminders I have, all upcoming professional development offerings are on our webpage at nysrti.org. Again, along with our PowerPoint for today and several other handouts, you'll find those under webinars and then today's webinar title. During today's presentation, please use the chat box for any questions or comments that you may have. And at the end of today's presentation, we'll post a link to a brief evaluation. I also send that via email right after the presentation. If you could please take a few minutes to complete that, we do look at that feedback and appreciate your time in doing that. We're very pleased to have Dr. Seth Aldrich back with us today to present our Strand 15 series, Integrating Tiered Database Decision-Making to Address Essential Questions in an RTI Process. Today is the third webinar in a 5-session strand, and today's topic is Progress Monitoring Essentials. Dr. Aldrich is a certified bilingual school psychologist as well as a New York State licensed psychologist who earned his PhD in psychology at Syracuse University. He works as a school psychologist for the Homer Central School District and also consults with school districts across the U.S. concerning response to intervention for academic and behavioral difficulties. Seth consults with districts to utilize FastBridge Learning as well as AIMSWeb and other RTI assessments as part of database decision-making within a tiered problem-solving process. He is a consortium member with the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center and works primarily with English as a new language learners, as well as family court-involved youth in his private practice. And at this time, it is my pleasure to welcome back Dr. Aldrich.
Thanks a lot, Molly. Hi, everybody. As Molly was saying, today we're going to focus on progress monitoring essentials. I'm just going to forward the screen here. There we go. So the topics that we're going to cover today are essential qualities and characteristics of progress monitoring measures, what are important things to consider when you're selecting those measures. We're going to talk about how to document instruction and interventions. We have to know what we're monitoring when we're planning and executing progress monitoring. We'll talk about matching general outcome measures to intervention, so making sure that that your measure for progress monitoring is sensitive to what you're doing. We'll spend a lot of time about setting realistic and ambitious goals for students. There are different ways of setting realistic but ambitious goals, and there's some new information out there, especially in the past 4 or 5 years, that I think has really kind of changed the game in terms of how we set goals for students. So we're going to talk about that. And at the end, I'm going to talk about social, emotional, and behavioral progress monitoring, some feasible, valid tools for doing that, because I think that is really important when we're looking at student growth. As I've always said, this is about planning, coordination, communicating, and responding to the data when we're doing database decision making. Molly, if you could put up the polls, I do want to know a little bit more about you and who's participating today. If you could please participate in these polls as well as the end of webinar evaluation, it's really helpful to get input and feedback about who you are and what you find helpful as I try to kind of guide what we do through. We'll have two remaining webinars. Next week will be on individual problem solving, and finally we'll be on more school and district, kind of the larger picture of decision making where we use data at a school and district level, and the kind of synergy that we're looking for when we're using database decision making. So I see a few people participating with the polls. If anybody else can weigh in. I see we've got some literacy interventionists. That's great. classroom teacher, other, special educator. We've had a really nice mix of grade levels participating. I do have to say that these presentations tend to be a little bit more elementary centric, maybe middle school. I will try to really talk about some examples with secondary, but we are a bit literacy centric. I'll try to incorporate math and, of course, social, emotional, and behavioral issues as well. Thank you, Molly. So we'll put those polls away and keep on progressing through. Some of these slides are going to be review. I go very quickly through these. There have been two previous webinars where I've talked about some of these slides more extensively. I do want to kind of put these up just more as a backdrop and kind of remind us of, you know, where we are in the picture. You know, we're going to be talking about, I'm going to take my little pointer tool here. You know, the academic side of RTI, where we're looking at tiered assessments, everybody at tier one, tier two might get more progress monitoring, certainly some intensity of intervention beyond what all students receive, and tier three being our intensive care, where we're really going to be looking at frequent progress monitoring, usually tier three students in the guidance document that we have for New York State. That's in the RTI TAC website. It's a very helpful guide. I really encourage anybody that has not seen the guidance document that kind of specifies the multi-tiered supports in terms of intervention and assessment to download the guidance document. It's extremely helpful. We're looking also on the behavioral side, where all students get some management strategies. There might be some students that need a little bit more than the typical kinds of support for social, emotional, and behavioral challenges. And then, of course, we have some students that really have some intensive needs in that area. Again, I've gone through this more in depth during the other webinars, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this slide. This whole series of webinars is about tiered problem solving. And again, I've talked about this slide extensively. For both benchmark assessments, progress monitor checkups, we're really going to focus kind of on these two areas here. Progress, post-benchmark data meetings where we're setting up progress monitoring, but then where we're periodically viewing progress monitoring either at post-benchmark meetings, progress monitor checkup meetings, individual problem solving meetings, and really viewing that data and responding to the data. So in the hierarchy, or in terms of the questions that we're going to be really addressing through our progress monitoring measures, again, this is a review slide. But we talk about the assessment questions that we have to address in database decision making. You know, what do students know? What are their needs? And what do we need to teach? Progress monitoring might give some information about that. But we're really focused more on who are the students that we prioritize for additional support. These might be students who are not responding to progress monitoring data and that we're going to perhaps intensify interventions. And so we're going to talk about the decision-making processes behind that. And really the meat of progress monitoring is the student making progress? Do I stay the course or do I make an instructional adjustment? So these, you know, I see for progress monitoring being the two main questions that we're really trying to address with progress monitoring. In terms of, you know, I've spent a lot of time talking about infrastructure in a school that really enables people to respond to data. If we're just kind of piecing it together kind of reactively and we don't have an infrastructure to support decision making and interventions and changing interventions and having a coordinated, planful response to the data, it becomes very difficult for schools to pull off. If we have an infrastructure where we have meetings scheduled and teams that are trained to respond to data. We have a number of interventions, not just one that we're pulling off the shelf, but We have this coordinated support system built into our school infrastructure. It becomes much easier. And that might include post-benchmark data meetings. This is where progress monitoring would be discussed. And at the fall meeting is when we would plan it. We'll talk about that. Checkup data meetings. This can be, every school does this differently. It might be one meeting in between the post-benchmark meetings. It might be collegial circles. It might be grade level meetings. It might be just smaller meetings between a consultant and a teacher, or a support staff member and a teacher. It might be individual problem-solving meetings that we have, but we're places in between the benchmarks where we're reviewing data for individual students. These effective problem-solving team meetings that we look at individual students, typically kids at Tier 2 and Tier 3, but of course it might be anybody that we would sit down and look at their data. And I do want to point out that progress monitoring data is important in terms of a multidisciplinary team meeting. And I'm going to talk about this just a little bit. This is something that we're going to address, or I'm going to address pretty extensively at the fifth webinar, where we talk about CSC decision making. One of the things about having this infrastructure and coordination and really thinking about our toolkit, the questions that we're trying to answer through all these measures, it's really important that we consider, okay, we've got meetings at our post-benchmark where we're prioritizing students for tiered supports, but at the same time, we might want to use the same data and some of this, and that data, that decision-making process may ultimately end up guiding our CSC referrals. Well, if you don't want to have data collection at this level, be one thing, and then have to do a completely different set of data collection at this level. If you're coordinated and you're using measures that can be used for multiple purposes, then you're going to really work more efficiently. You're not going to be having to do, your assessments are going to be strong assessments, reliable, valid, psychometrically sound. They're going to be, you're going to have enough data when you get to that process to make really sound decisions. And our progress monitoring data is part, in terms of the RTI guidelines for identifying especially learning disabilities. Of course, we're trying to prevent unnecessary or improper referrals for learning disability evaluations. But you really know that there are some students that really need a contract for education, and that we've done due process through our problem-solving process and RTI process, that we have appropriate referrals for learning disabilities. So the progress monitoring data we're going to discuss again, especially at Webinar 5 for those multidisciplinary team meetings. I just want to talk a little bit about this slide. The idea of how much would a district pay for a Tier 2 or even Tier 3 intervention that worked for every single student? When I've presented this question or posed this question to a number of audiences, people kind of laugh. They kind of chuckle, like, well, that's ridiculous. There is no one intervention or instructional approach that works for every single student. We know that it might be a really good intervention. It works for 80% of the kids, but this kid happens to be part of the 20% that it doesn't work for. We kind of know that. Yet sometimes in our practice, schools might have one intervention approach that they pull up the shelf and have for an intervention. It's crucial that we have multiple approaches to assisting and supporting students in their learning, whether it's literacy, whether it's math, whether it's behavior, social-emotional behavioral issues. There's no one approach that works for every student. And I always think of the Stephen Wright, the comedian. He says, "Why don't they make the plane out of that black box stuff?" You know, there's nothing that works for every single kid. Yet sometimes we practice that way, where if a student doesn't respond to the one intervention that we have available at that grade level, they're referred for a special education evaluation. We blame it on the student's neurology instead of saying, "Well, this didn't work for the child, let's try something else. And we're going to talk about that quite a bit in terms of responding to the data, responding to the student's needs, trying different things, and when those things don't work out, we switch it up, and there are different things that we can do to support that student. And it's important that we have interventions to address those needs. Having a intervention inventory, this is a review slide. I've gone over this pretty extensively in the other webinars, but it is crucial. If we're doing progress monitoring, we really have to know what the student, what we're monitoring. We have to know the intervention, what the intervention is targeted to address, and your progress monitoring system has to map onto that instructional approach or that intervention approach. So that's it's really important. I have to say, when we get into problem-solving meetings or benchmark meetings where we're really trying to come up with interventions that are going to support students' needs, having a menu like this, one for Tier 3 interventions, one for Tier 2 interventions that the districts put together, and one for core support, where we talk about the name of the approach or the intervention, the grades used, skills addressed, source of evidence. That would be, how do we know that this works? Is this something we made up and there's no evidence that it works? Or is there strong evidence that this is an approach that works for these particular skills at this particular grade level? We might want to talk about the staff training and staff needs to pull it off, time per day needed, days per week, group size, and then how we would support that intervention in the building. Again, this is a review slide, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. This particular chart, but I do want to kind of come back to, you know, how we're prioritizing students for progress monitoring. In our previous discussions or webinars, we've talked about step three of the data meeting, where we plan and assign students to targeted tiered interventions, tier three and tier two. This happens to be a FastBridge report. I have to do a full disclosure. I am affiliated with FastBridge currently. I've also done some training with AIMSWeb and work with schools at USTAR and iReady. So some of those will be some of the tools that we'll be talking about a little bit. But it's really important. This is not an endorsement for any particular tool, and I want to talk with you about these kinds of measures in a way that kind of you can generalize to whatever tool you're using. And we will have a poll, because I do really want to know what particular tool you all are using for progress monitoring. So we'll be talking about that. But when we're at step three of the data meeting, and this typically occurs in the fall, we kind of go up the list of typically whether this is AIMSWeb or FastBridge or STAR, or I believe iReady is coded the same way. Many of your data management tools will code kids who have significant needs in red. This happens to be a local norm. And we would kind of work up the list saying, based on our district's or school's decision rules, saying, these students really might get Tier 2 or Tier 3 supports. We kind of work up the list, decide what resources we have at the grade level to accommodate the most students that we can. As soon as we expend those resources, we have to decide who's going to get Tier 1 supports. Part of that step in the data meeting also is who is going to be getting progress monitoring. You know, I kind of like to tell the story of my own kids when they would get sick. Might happen at at nighttime, and they might have a complaint of a stomach ache or a headache. They feel a little bit ill. So I would use the rough screener. I'd put my hand to their forehead, and if their forehead was hot, I would use a thermometer, a little bit more of a reliable, robust measure. If they had a fever of 99, I wouldn't take them to the emergency room. If they had a fever of 105, we might be thinking, yeah, we need to go somewhere. So the same way that we sort of prioritize risk for progress monitoring, we don't take the temperature of a child if they don't have signs of ill health. Teachers are assessing all of the time. We want to be efficient about our assessments. So once a student is deemed to get Tier 2 or Tier 3 supports, we begin to monitor more frequently. We would not do weekly progress monitoring for all students. It's not really sustainable, and we don't want teachers and support staff or teacher assistants. We want them engaged in instruction as opposed to assessment. So we prioritize our progress monitoring for just a subgroup of students. It's really important when you're choosing a progress monitoring tool that they have certain qualities. Because this data might be used for IEPs or special education decision making, special education referrals, progress monitoring is typically used as part of a dual discrepancy that we'll talk about in Webinar 5 for identifying part of that comprehensive evaluation for learning disabilities. We're now talking about measures that we really want to kind of be pretty careful about their psychometric properties. Because that might be part of a high stakes decision. And there are various progress monitoring tools that do have very strong psychometric qualities, and we'll talk about the pros and cons of various tools. It's essential that if you're doing weekly progress monitoring, that the tool is sensitive to progress over short periods of time. There are progress monitoring tools out there, particularly the curriculum-based measures, that are very brief and they're very sensitive to progress over short periods of time. The idea being when a student isn't responding to intervention, we don't want to be waiting a half a year to respond to that data, and we'll be talking about that throughout this webinar. But we want the assessment to be sensitive to progress in short periods of time so we can respond to that data and switch things up when it's not working. It's important to have multiple equated forms. Equated is essential because if they're not equated, 1 week they get the easy form, they get a high score. The next week they get a more difficult passage or test or assessment, and they get a lower score, and you get all sorts of bounce in your data. We're going to talk about that as we go. Of these assessments, extensive work is field testing is done to equate passages or forms so that you can have really good quality progress monitoring. We talk about independence from a specific curriculum. Many intervention tools have assessments embedded in them, and they're very helpful. It's great to have that. But you also want to be able to assess whether the student can generalize skills that are taught within that program to what we call a general outcome measure. So something that's really independent from a specific curriculum. It's kind of ironic. I think it's really a misnomer that we call the CBMs curriculum-based measures, because really we're really using those measures now more of as a general outcome measure that's independent from any specific curriculum, and they're sensitive to improvement in foundation skills. They need to measure important things. They predict functional skills. Your progress monitoring should, and we'll talk about that. It's important that they monitor what's being instructed. We would not use, I'm going to be kind of ridiculous now, we wouldn't use a math progress monitoring when we're measuring a reading intervention. The same kind of goes to if you're really doing a very strong phonics or phonemic awareness intervention, you might look at a reading assessment or passage assessment as a general outcome measure, but make sure that they're reading some connected text if you're doing that. Your monitoring has to map on to what's being instructed and with your intervention, the intervention that you're monitoring. If you're doing progress monitoring weekly, it needs to be easy to administer consistently with fidelity. And the guidelines for New York State RTI, as well as the National Center for RTI, we talk about for Tier 3, students should be getting weekly monitoring. If you're doing weekly monitoring, you can't be doing an assessment that's taking a student out of instruction for 30 or 60 minutes. You want something that's very brief. We talk about a temperature or a scale, something that's reflective of the student returning to health, getting better, in an important reflective measure, but also very feasible. That's really, we're going to talk about this throughout this webinar. And the goals need to be understandable. So parents are often an audience for progress monitoring tools. You need to be able to say to parents, this is what it will mean when the student meets this goal. So we want those goals to be understandable. So as we go through this webinar, we'll really talk about some of these concepts of the qualities of progress monitoring. So I do want to ask you, Molly, if you could pull up the poll of what folks on participating in the webinar are using for progress monitoring. I really would love to hear from you. If you could please participate in this poll. I know in the past we've seen people participating have been using STAR and AIMSWeb quite a bit. Some of the slides that I present are examples, and I hope that you're able to kind of generalize some of the concepts that I talk about with the particular slides, just because I wanted to illustrate some of these concepts through a concrete measure. I see we got some STAR, we got some AIMSWeb, Fontes-Pinel, DRA, district-created measures, other and none. Okay. Anybody else? Okay, so let's progress on. Thank you for those of you who participated in that. I'm going to go to the next slide. I'm going to talk a little bit about, because we see iReady, we see STAR, I see AIMSWeb, and this is a review slide, but I want to talk about it a little bit. It's not exactly review. Last time we talked about some tools used for universal screening. And now I want to talk about some tools used for progress monitoring, and this is in literacy and in math. But typically, we've got tools that are computer adaptive tests. Those are tests that the student goes onto the computer. These might be some examples of these computer adaptive tests are STAR, FastBridge, EasyCBN. I'm sorry, iReady, NWA would be another. Computer adaptive tests, CBMs, and I'm going to talk about the qualities of those, would be examples would be AIMSWeb, DIBLS, FastBridge is also a CBM, EasyCBM. And so with the computer adaptive tests, there's some real qualities about them. They're an excellent predictive measure of broad skills. They can assess, these are kinds of tests, we've talked about them in the past webinar, a student gets on the computer or a class of students gets into a computer lab, they log in or a proctor logs them in. It might be 30 to 60 minutes of them clicking through screens, answering some questions. If they get questions correct, it bounces them into more difficult items. If they get items incorrect, it bounces them into easier items. So it's computer adaptive. It's vertical. So a first grader might get into fourth or fifth grade items or on up through 12th grade items. A eighth grader might be bumped into easier items if they're getting a lot incorrect. So it's kind of vertical, and it can assess more applied skills, vocabulary, comprehension, math applications. So they're very good in that respect. CBMs don't really do this so well. They're very feasible for teachers because in 30 minutes or 60 minutes, a whole classroom goes on the computers, the data is collected. There's no one-on-one assessment with computer adaptive tests. Teachers don't really need to be trained to conduct these, so there's a real allure there. The problem with computer adaptive tests is they can be less sensitive to improvement. Because they're adaptive and because there's so many different skills being assessed, you might not see the sensitivity to growth. And in my experience and a lot of other people's experience, you might see a lot of variability in the data from week to week. And that makes decision-making very difficult. The other limitation of computer adaptive tests for progress monitoring is most, and unfortunately I've seen this advertised even in the national RTI site, where certain computer adaptive tests take 10 minutes to take. The reality, I believe, is that they're taking more like 20 to 30 minutes per week, and that's time out of instruction. So I have some real concerns about a 30-minute progress monitoring that's occurring on a weekly basis, and I know I'm not alone in that concern. So one of the limitations for progress monitoring using a computer adaptive test, or you know, even a Fontes and Pinnell or DRA, some of those tests that we would see as more diagnostic assessments, you wouldn't want to do those on a weekly basis, running records. They might be taking, depending on what you can fit in, it might just not be sustainable to be assessing 30 students using assessments that are one-on-one or take 30 minutes to do. So you have to be very careful about that. The computer-based or the curriculum-based assessments like AIMSWeb, FastBridge, DIBLS, EasyCBM, they have some good qualities. They're very good assessment of specific skills, math computation, letter sounds, nonsense words, reading connected text, or reading fluency in passages. So some specific skills that are very predictive of functioning at a given grade level are covered with these CBMs, and so they're excellent assessments for that. They're very predictive. They're a good general outcome measure for improving foundation skills, so that a real strength of CBMs. This is one of their major qualities. They're brief. They take 1 to 2 minutes for a weekly assessment of a student. They don't take time out of instruction for students, which is a huge characteristic. They're very sensitive to improvement so that we can look at data usually in about 8 weeks and make a call on the slope, and we'll be looking at some of these graphs for the CBMs. Multiple forms, so typically you'll have 20 or 30 forms that are equated that you can use for weekly progress monitoring, and there's a ton of research about the CBMs. When you look at most of the studies addressing learning disability identification using RTI data, we're usually talking about a CBM measure. Those are typically the assessments referenced. Because they've got some norms, we've got norms for growth, there's a lot that have to do with the CBMs. I am going to focus mostly on these CBM measures because they really are the most frequently recommended tool for progress monitoring. You can find and kind of vet your own progress monitoring tools. I'm going to go very quickly through the site. I just wanted to show you where you can find different tools for progress monitoring on the National Center for Intensive Intervention. This is an excellent site for intervention, progress monitoring for both academics and behavioral. You have academic progress monitoring tools charts, behavioral progress monitoring, behavior interventions tools charts, and academic intervention programs tools charts. This is an excellent site put on by the American Institute of Research. So I highly recommend this site. I'm going to go very, very quickly through it. You can see that it's kind of one of those consumer reports. This just happens to be a slide on iReady. You can see that in terms of psychometrics, iReady has some strong psychometrics. All the bubbles are filled in. For progress monitoring qualities, alternate forms, rates of improvement specified, end of year benchmarks, gets pretty good qualities there. This happens to be mathematics, iReady. And then actually on this data-based individualization, it looks like there's not a lot of information. I do have to say that many of the tools have these kind of blanks on this particular side. But you use this site for yourselves. I just wanted to alert you that this is available, and this is the address of the site. And, of course, this PowerPoint will be available for downloading. Data meeting step three, again, we're kind of back to when do we do this planning for progress monitoring logistics? We typically are doing this in the beginning of the year after the students have been assessed for that first benchmark. We're identifying the students who are going to need some tiered intervention. Those students are typically prioritized for weekly or bi-weekly progress monitoring. But we have to know what the interventions are in. If it's phonemic awareness, we want to have a tool. If a phonemic awareness is really the focus of the intervention, we might want to have a tool that assesses phonemic awareness. Typically, we look at word segmenting. FastBridge happens to have word blending and rhyming. We have tools that have initial sound. Dibbles does that. FastBridge does that. So you've got some tools that have phonemic awareness progress monitoring. So you have to kind of balance, because you want your progress monitoring to be specific to the targeted skill that you're intervening on, but you also want to think about, what's my end of year goal? Sometimes you're picking a progress monitor tool that is really a general outcome measure for what you want to happen at the end of the year. So you're kind of getting a baseline, and the student, you know, at first it might be kind of a difficult for the assessment for the student. But you're kind of thinking about the end of year goal. And at your decision making times, you want to have you want to talk about what the intervention's addressing, what the need is, what the intervention's going to be, and a progress monitoring tool that maps onto the need and the intervention that's being provided. So really, at the data meeting where you're kind of getting your ducks in a row at the beginning of the year, it's essential to map your progress monitor tool over to both what your current target is for intervention, as well as monitoring of what you'd like the student to achieve at the end of the intervention period, whether that's and typically we're going kind of a fall to spring goal, and that's some of the examples that I'm going to be using. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this slide either. I do have a resource for downloading is available on the TAC site that Molly referred to, and this kind of helps you through how you document an intervention, because you're doing a lot of work to support students at Tier 2 and Tier 3, and you want to really be documenting exactly what happened for that student. You really want to have a record of all the approaches that have been tried. So we want to know who's involved. You want to, if the intervention is evidence-based, it should have a name. It's been peer-reviewed, or there's something about this that has been vetted, it's evidence-based. Where does it occur? When during the day? If it's Tier 2 and Tier 3, it shouldn't be a part of your core instruction. It should be in addition to core instruction. Why it was chosen? What does it target? How often it's being administered? How much time the student's getting in that intervention? And any other information that's relevant to the intervention. This resource is available for download. So an example for an intervention, we want it to be long enough that fully describes what's happening for the student, yet short enough that somebody's going to be able to read it. We don't want three pages. We don't want three phrases. So an example might be, weak phonics skill impact Will's reading fluency and therefore comprehension. Both phonics and fluency were targeted for intervention. Core instruction includes 90 minutes of blank, so describe your core instruction, at level blank. What level was the student taught at? Were they taught at an instructional level? Was it differentiated? In addition, Will participates in a Tier 3 reading group that includes the following interventions. List those interventions, really talk about what they are, for 30 minutes daily in a ratio of 3-1. A teacher assistant works with Will and four other students, additionally, 3 days a week in the classroom using blank. What might that be? Both Will's classroom and reading teacher are using blank. I'm just kind of really documenting everything that we're doing for Will throughout the day to help Will improve reading comprehension. So we're really not just addressing phonics and fluency, but also comprehension. This is a pretty comprehensive intervention that we're doing for Will. Will also has a daily teacher behavior report card that reinforces careful work completion and appropriate active participation during lessons. So we really kind of talk soup to nuts about the different areas that of literacy that are being addressed with this intervention, and even including what we're going to be doing to kind of improve engagement, a non-literacy intervention. And at the end of this PowerPoint, we're going to hopefully have some time for those social, emotional, behavioral progress monitoring. I include this, and this is a resource that you can download. Here's some examples of things that you might want to document discreetly. We want to be very respectful of confidential information. If the event was done, began wearing glasses on this date, you can certainly put that in your documented things that were important that might have had a bearing on improvement for the student. Other things like medications, we would not want to put into information that was not being in a really confidential place. So we might just say medical intervention, medical change on this date, please refer to confidential file, and really don't get into those specifics that need to be held confidential. This is a resource, again, kind of you might want to, with a little description, that if you were really wanting to be careful in your district to document these kinds of things, you know, how you would do that in an appropriate and discreet manner. Okay, so we're going to really talk about some of the progress monitoring logistics now. This is an example of a progress monitor chart. Whether you're using Dibbles, FastBridge, EasyCBM, I believe, would have graphs like this. This just happens to be an Ames web chart. And I'm going to talk about some of the conventions of progress monitoring. This also, if you're using a computer adaptive assessment like STAR, you're still going to have things like this where the score is on this axis. So in this case, the student's starting out. This happens to be a grade 2 reading standard progress monitor passages, grade 2 Ames Web progress monitoring. Student starts out at about 17 words. More information would be on the page below here. But just how you would interpret a graph like this. This black line is our goal. There's a reason that we chose the goal for this, and we're going to talk about different methods for choosing a reasonable but ambitious goal for a student and how we do that. Each dot, in this case, the reds are corrects that the student's getting, and you can see from 9/24, September 24th, through January 28th, we had no progress here. The student, this is really staying right around 20 words a minute. We tried a new intervention, a core adjustment intervention. That three sentence or that maybe two paragraph intervention description should be down here. AmesWeb does a very nice job of documenting some of those interventions, as do other progress monitoring tools. It's kind of a database for everything that you're doing for the student. So we tried another intervention. The student still didn't make progress, and we've got slopes and rates of improvement that are represented by this dotted line. They're the line of best fit that intersect these data points. We can see that there's, you know, if we just keep on going on this path, the student, you know, at the end of the year will not have really improved in these basic foundation skills that are reflected by reading passages fluently and accurately. So we try intervention 3. The idea being, if he's not making progress here with this intervention, we just might not have found the right intervention. So we try something else, and we still say, well, you know, maybe this isn't an intervention, a good student intervention fit. It might be a great intervention for 80% of students. It's just not a good intervention for Billy. So we try intervention 3. Wow. Now we're starting to see the growth. For whatever reason, we see Billy making some nice improvement. And in this case, we said, you know what? She's probably, you know, projecting that goal line up toward the end. She may not get up to 96 words a minute, but if we can just sustain this nice accelerated improvement for the rest of the year, we would be happy. So we just readjust the goal, and AmesWeb provides that capability where you can do that. And so this, in this case, we've got a really nice example of, you know, where we're trying different things, where if it's not effective within about 8 to 10 weeks, we're changing it up until we find the thing that really has a nice impact on the student. what we really want to do is avoid this. I would never want to share this graph with a parent where we set a goal and we continued to progress monitor and we never did anything to change that. At least there's nothing documented. Maybe they were doing a lot of things for the student, but there's nothing documented here to say when we saw that the student wasn't progressing, what did we do differently for this student? This would be, we really want to avoid this kind of chart. We want to really show and show that we're responding to the data. Different kinds of setting realistic but ambitious goals we're going to talk about now. They're norm-referenced goals. And the idea about a norm-referenced goal is by the end of the year, I want the student to be, typically we would say, above the 25th percentile. That 25th percentile is kind of where we're talking about students sort of being in the pack. So are they able to meet grade level expectations similar to their peers? We have criterion referenced goals, and that is we want the student to be able to have a performance at the end of the year that means they're low risk. And typically, as we've discussed in the previous webinars, that might be around the 45th percentile. Typically, these criterion are scores that would predict passing in other measures, such as a state test. I'm going to focus a lot on rate of improvement goals. This happens to be my particular favorite of them, and I'm going to talk about the advantages and disadvantages of all of them. And then there's also an intra-individual framework. That is, based on their previous performance, can they just accelerate a little bit based on what they've shown us in the past? So we're going to talk about these different kinds of progress monitoring goals. Setting these realistic but ambitious goals is extremely important, and I'm going to talk about why. In this case, I've got, again, I'd like to kind of map these kind of concepts onto some very real universal screening and progress monitoring tools. This happens to be an example of an Ames Web benchmark assessment. This one here would be STAR. So the idea of a norm referenced goal would be the student, for those of you who don't know Box and Whiskers, I'm probably not going to do a Box and Whisker lesson, but suffice it to say, the student is below the group here. This would be the scores represented, you know, by most of the students' peers either nationally or locally. This student is below the 10th percentile, I know from this Box and Whisker report. The dot is the student. And for a norm-referenced goal, what I'm trying to do is by the end of the year, I want to accelerate that student, we call it into the green, where the student is kind of in the pack of their peers. And again, this might be locally or nationally or compared to some peer group. We want to get them into the green. In this particular case, I know that this is a local chart for a low-performing school district because the criteria for success is way up here, and this particular peer group is not performing really well in relation to what would be the 45th percentile typically. There's a problem with that. We might be saying, well, I want them to be average for the local norm, but the local norm might be not very ambitious. The advantages of a norm reference target is that we want the student to be in the pack, requiring less differentiation. The student feels comfortable relative to peers, and they're able to kind of keep up with classmates. The disadvantages, the rate might be too ambitious or not ambitious enough. I'm going to talk a little bit. In this case, it might not be ambitious enough. In this next example, I'm going to talk about, and again, with STAR, we would be trying to get into this criterion about the 40th percentile. For Ames Web, we'd be trying to get up into the 45th percentile, that criterion. You're trying to bring a student in the fall from the below the 10th percentile to the 45th percentile. Now, that might be, that's very ambitious. The question is it realistic? It may or may not be, and it really depends on what you're providing for the student, but the amount of progress that it might take to get from the 10th percentile or below the 10th percentile, like a tier 3 student, to get up into the proficient or, you know, 45th percentile might not be realistic. It really, you take that on a case-by-case basis, but you would just want to be very careful about it. When we set goals that are too ambitious, the problem that can happen is, number one, you can have an intervention where the student's making an excellent rate of improvement, and but you don't think it's excellent because they're not hitting that goal line that we talked about right here. It may be that you just selected a goal line that was too ambitious. In this case, we know that the student just wasn't progressing. But we have to be very careful about setting ambitious but realistic goals. That's why I kind of really like rate of improvement goals. The idea of rate of improvement goals is that it's we call them catch-up goals, where they're accelerated progress. And there's some real advantages to these rate of improvement goals. And in the past 4 or 5 years, there are now available norms to actually know how students typically progress on these measures, including STAR. FastBridge has rate of improvement norms. AIMSWeb has rate of improvement norms. And so the advantages of these kind of rate of improvement goals is they can be applied to all students regardless of their skill level. And again, we're going to look at some examples of this in just a second. It's also a metric at any point in the year. If I set a goal to say, well, at the end of the year, I want Johnny to be at 110 words a minute. Unless I'm really looking at where they are on the rate of improvement, in November or January or March, 110 doesn't mean anything. I need to know whether they're on track to get to 100. So we often look at slope at any one point in time, the slope that the student's making, that where they're projected to get to that end of the year goal. So let's just look at slope, and we're going to talk about that in the next couple of slides. So at any point in the year, if you're paying attention to their rate of improvement or their slope of improvement, we know that they're on track to meeting their goals. The disadvantage of rate of improvement goals is it might take more than a year for the student to reach proficiency, and this is the example that I'm going to show you. The idea behind rate of improvement goals is, and a catch-up or accelerated goal, is if a student's getting 90 minutes of differentiated, scientifically-based instruction in the core with an additional 30 to 60 minutes of targeted, evidence-based intervention, they should make a catch-up rate. It should be accelerated. They should be improving above and beyond their peers that are not getting that kind of intensive intervention. And that's our goal, is for them to catch up to peers. AIMSWeb and FastBridge have percentiles associated with rates of improvement. I typically recommend a 75th percentile growth rate. I think it's achievable, it's ambitious, and so it's a realistic but ambitious goal. So we're going to talk about an example of doing that here. So we got a story about Billy. Billy's a second grader. He takes a fall universal screening in September. And again, CBM reading passages and calculating words read correct in 1 minute with percent accuracy is really kind of the probably most often recommended measure for progress monitoring. It's reliable, valid, brief, sensitive, easy to administer, and it only takes 1 or 2 minutes a week for a student. So that's typically the measure that we're using for progress monitoring. In this case, this student is reading really, the 10 words a minute is quite weak. In fact, many times we would have gone and used first grade passages for progress monitoring in this case, but I'm just going to use this as an example. I'm going to kind of use an easy math example. We set a goal for Billy for a progress monitoring schedule that ends June 16th. That's going to be 35 instructional weeks. From September 18th to June 16th, there are 35 instructional weeks. Now, say we set a goal of one word per week. So he's improving his oral reading fluency, his automaticity and accuracy on those one-minute passages. Every week he's improving by one word in a minute. Well, over 35 weeks, he should improve by 35 words. Well, he was already at 10. So what we do is we take that baseline score of 10, we add the 35 that he's going to improve by, and so the end of year goal is going to be 45. That's the goal that we're going to set for him. There's some advantages of this and disadvantages that you're going to see in just a second. So this is what it looks like. He starts off at 10. You can see here on the y-axis in September. And so our goal for him is to get up to 45 by the end of the year. And you see that over here. This is where we're wanting to get. And this represents exactly one word per week growth. Now, it never looks like this. Usually there's a lot of bounce in your data. But this is kind of the goal that we set, and he's following that rate. Now, the problem with this one word a week is the typical rate we know from norms in AIMSWeb that the typical second grader is making 1.2 words per week growth. The typical second grader starts out at 62 words a minute. That's 50th percentile for second grade, so we're here. And they're performing above Billy, and they're progressing faster on average, just according to the norms that we know what average second graders make. And a lot of these tools, again, STAR, FastBridge, AIMSWeb, other tools are developing these norms for progress. And so we see this rate there. These students are above Billy, and they're progressing faster. The gap is widening. This is exactly what we're trying to avoid with RTI. So we by setting up a goal of one word per week, Billy is being set to fall further behind. It's inadequate. But we have to have some kind of norms or some kind of a metric or some understanding of what kids typically achieve in order to understand that. So we see that the gap increases from fall to spring. This is kind of like I like to use runners. We've got kids in a cross-country race that they're ahead and they're running faster. We've got the group that are kind of in the middle of the pack that are running kind of quote-unquote normally or in the average speed. And then we've got a bunch of people, no offense to middle-aged guys, but they're behind and they're progressing slower. What we need is this group that's behind to try to catch up to this group. And this is how we set that up. There are these norm tables for various assessments where we look at 75th percentile growth. So average growth would be 1.2, that's 50th percentile in this band, and it's fall to spring. This is an AIMSWeb example, but I'm going to show you another tool based on a different norm group and different assessments where the data looks amazingly similar. So 1.2 would be average growth for a second grader, fall to spring. And again, this would be for any grade level or many measures, whether it's math, whether it's early literacy, whether it's reading connected text. And then we have 75th percentile growth. We might set a goal of 1.5. It's kind of in this band here. So average second graders, 75th percentile might be 1.5. Many measures have, well, this is what students who begin in the fall benchmark between the 10th and 25th percentile, what their rate of growth typically is, 1.57 to 1.70 would be 75th percentile growth, and what very low students who start out below the 10th percentile do. I'm going to go through this really quickly for the sake of time. I know we're coming up to 5 o'clock. I wanted to put up this slide, and you can kind of look at this kind of in your leisure if you download the PowerPoint. For first grade, this is where we really see gaps emerge. 50th percentile growth, winter to spring, is about 0.6 words a week if you start out in the 10th percentile or below. That's the average growth that, on average, the national norm of kids that AIMSWeb did their research on, And this is replicated across different measures. These kids tend to make slower growth and they're behind. Kids between the 10th and 25th percentile on average make about one word per week growth. Kids that are average make about 2 words a week growth. Well, no, I'm sorry, make about 1.6 words per week growth. We want them to, again, we want this group to try to catch up at least to this group. So we use these norms of improvement. Bassbridge, it's interesting, in their growth norms, 75th percentile for second grade, 1.6, exactly the same as Angel. Now, this is a completely different tool, different probes, a whole different norming sample, and you get the same kind of thing where 75th percentile growth for second grade is 1.6 words per week. So there's this sort of universal quality to some of this. That's always really interesting. And again, I'm using a second grade example, but you can look at various grades and various skills. I'm going to go pretty quickly through this. So instead of using a one word per week growth rate, we're going to give Billy a 1.6 word per week growth rate. That is, it's realistic. It's not 99.9th percentile growth that very few students achieve, and it's not average growth. We expect him to make an accelerated growth, 1.6 words per week, compared to the rate of a typical second grader that might be making 1.2. And as you can see, over the course of the year, we see the gap decreasing. He might not get to average by the end of the year, but hopefully over time, in fact, in this particular case, he's going from the 4th percentile to the 14th percentile, which some people might say, well, that's not enough. Well, then you need to throw more at him. And you need to, you know, really intensify that intervention. Perhaps then you can expect a little bit more. It's because we responded to the data that we allowed Billy to catch up a little bit more. And you can see that he made that goal in this example. The idea is we have to remember that we can't just wish a goal on a student. It's what we provide them in terms of the intensity of the support that help us to set these realistic but ambitious growth rates. We can't just do business as usual and do the same kind of instruction that we're doing for everybody else and then expect them and wish an accelerated growth rate. We have to really provide them with really intensive instruction if we expect them to really make that kind of progress. Some things that you might have to deal with when you've got really variable data, I want to just talk about this a little bit. When you've got lots of ups and downs in your data, you have to look at different things. And here's a star example of really variable data. Is the tool well designed for progress monitoring? Was the student engaged during the progress monitoring sessions? This might be not engaged, engaged, not engaged, engaged. Is the student receiving the intervention consistently? And is the assessment being conducted in a standardized way and consistently? These are things that you really want to consider when you've got lots of bounce in your data. When you've got bounce like this, it takes a lot longer. It might be a lot more than 8 weeks to determine whether they're making progress or not. So that's it's really important to get those measures that are really equated from period to period, that have norms so that you know what to expect in terms of targets and rates of improvement. Having those kind of tried and true research measures, there are tons of advantages to that. In your post-benchmark meeting, this is review, we've already talked about this. This is where you formally review that data, the progress monitoring data. And again, there are all sorts of ways that schools build in review of progress monitoring data into their infrastructure. But it's extremely important that we're not just collecting all this progress monitoring data and then not responding to it. We should be able to at least every 6 to 8 weeks, we would want to be formally looking at the data. Teachers that look at their data every week tend to produce stronger results, and there have been replicated studies about that. When teachers attend to formative evaluation data, we see students making increased growth. Progress monitoring, we don't consider it an intervention, but teachers' attention to formative evaluation data, the sound data, tend to make much stronger gains for their students. So in that progress monitor checkup, we always want to celebrate the progress students are making. If they're not making progress, we need to get an intervention change into place. And we've gone through this. I do want to very briefly in the next just couple of minutes talk about social, emotional, and behavioral progress monitoring. This is an example of a teacher behavior report card where we pick two behaviors that we're going to try to reinforce for the student, keeps them accountable. There might be three times a day that we're giving feedback for completing work to the best of her ability. This is Hannah, that she's engaged in learning. We teach her what completing work to the best of her ability is. We give her feedback. We talk about what does engagement mean? What does engagement look like? What does it sound like? And we give feedback concerning those prioritized behavior. It's really more of a behavioral intervention, but you can use this archival data with some criteria for what a good day is to document student success. What if you wanted to really be, the problem with this is what success and what's engaged in September, you might want to really up the ante on and increase expectations over the course of the year. So there's a lot of drift with these kinds of behavior plans. This DBR, and there's increasing research on direct behavior ratings as a formative evaluation of social, emotional, and behavioral progress. It's great because you pick perhaps five behaviors that would really help the student to learn and adjust in the classroom. It might be focus on work, completing work to the best of their ability, might be refraining from calling out, polite words and actions. There are all sorts of things that we would identify through a problem identification interview that are very important to the teacher. And the teacher rates them from 1 to 10 each day. It takes about 10 to 15 seconds once the teacher really knows the drill to complete this rating. It might be multiple times a day, or it might be a couple times a day. It might be just at the end of the day. You might have frequency counts, like tantrums lasting more than 10 seconds, hopefully low incidence behaviors that you can count, so you can collect data concerning that. In this particular direct behavior rating, we have fatigue level or perhaps a medication side effect, that they're lethargic, so they would have a 1 for lethargy. Good energy level would be a 5. 10 would be too much energy. These materials are available for download on the TAC site for this webinar. And you might have a rubric that kind of anchors those ratings. This is all available on the website for you to download. So behavioral progress monitoring might be graphed, where we try an intervention, and we've got this happens to just be an Excel spreadsheet with that DBR data graph. We try different interventions, and once we add incentives and consequences to the behavior plan, we see the student meeting the goal level of 8 on a 10-point scale, which might be a successful 80% of the time with relatively little prompting. And so that's just an example of behavioral progress monitoring. I want to talk just very, very briefly about math for a second. I think I'm probably a little bit math negligent sometimes. For math progress monitoring, it's a little challenging because the assessments that we have for math, whether it's computer adaptive, or say AIMSWeb has MCOMP and MCAP, they might assess a survey, a number of skills that are being addressed at the grade level. So because they're assessing so many different things on these different probes, you might be only assessing a small piece of what's being assessed. And so the sensitivity to growth is kind of impacted. On the other hand, you might have in FastBridge and AIMSWeb have things like fact probes, the number of addition or subtraction problems completed in 1 minute, multiplication or division or mixed probes. And so those are very targeted, specific math skills that you're targeting in instruction. But those might not be targets that you would have for a whole year. So with math, you kind of have to balance what you want to select for a progress monitoring tool. Well, you want that really narrow band assessment, like multiplication problems computed in 2 minutes, or say a MCOMP probe that includes all sorts of third grade, for example, problems, and it's an 8-minute assessment that you would do. So there are disadvantages and advantages to those narrow band progress monitoring probes and wider band progress monitoring probes. So that is the end of the presentation. I would really love to hear any questions that you might have. And before folks leave, I would really appreciate if you filled out the evaluation. It really helps us to guide what we do with the webinar and helps us with future webinars. So please, if you post any questions in the chat, I'd love to hear them and respond to them. I see multiple attendees are typing. The question being, for progress screening and monitoring, STAR is appropriate to use? So that's a great question. I have to be really careful answering that one. And the reason is if you go to the National Center would say STAR is an excellent progress monitoring tool. My concern about STAR is that although the National Center says that it takes 10 minutes for progress monitoring, I've seen more like 20 to 30 minutes time out of instruction for a reading assessment per week. And I feel that that's too much. I've also seen quite a bit of variability in the data for STAR because it's a computer adaptive test. So I myself, and professionally, have some issues with STAR being used as a weekly progress monitor. The great thing about STAR is that it does include things on vocabulary and comprehension, where a CBM or reading fluency has foundation skills that predict comprehension. STAR, FastBridge, those kind of computer adaptive tests, iReady, those assessments directly assess vocabulary and comprehension. So again, you have to kind of weigh the advantages and disadvantages, but that's an excellent question. The National Center would say that STAR is appropriate. I think there are some advantages and disadvantages of that particular assessment for progress monitoring. I hope I answered that question. If there's any follow-up, I'd certainly welcome it.
Okay, go ahead. But I just wanted to point out that I did post the evaluation link, and it will also come via email to you, so if you could take a few minutes to complete that.
Monitoring basic skills progress. I know the reading portion of monitoring basic skills progress. It's a maze. Fuchs, Hamlet, and Fuchs had it. This was really cool stuff years and years ago. I know that it's evolved, and I can't say that I know a lot about it. You're a math RTI specialist. They used to have the Black Line Masters. I'm not sure where that particular tool has gone, but I do know that the monitoring basic skills progress is described and kind of rated on that National Center for Intensive Intervention. So I'll have to take another look at that, because we used to use that in the early 90s. There's some really cool software for that time. That was really cool software. Still do have the Black Line Masters. Yes. And, if Lynn and Doug Fuchs are putting it out, it's pretty high quality. So that's great that you're accessing that. Our step, so use of AIS, is that not in existence? Our staff members referred to as AIS. Yeah, thank you. I think of AIS providers, academic intervention services, as your interventionists. And how AIS is structured in your building. You know, I think you may or may not know, districts can complete a waiver so that RTI kind of takes over for your AIS. And I think it can really strengthen the AIS. The way districts, if you've got a fully functioning RTI process, you submit a waiver to the state, and you can say our RTI kind of takes care of AIS. It really has a lot of the same qualities. The nice thing about RTI is it's a little bit more intensive, I think, where sometimes you'll see AIS groups of 20, 25, and I think most people would say that in terms of an intensive intervention, groups of 20 or 25 don't really work. But I think AIS staff can be tremendous resources if you use them wisely and don't overload your groups. So, yes, your AIS teachers can have very valuable resources in the building. I think we just have to not overburden them and provide them with a feasible workload.
Okay, well, that looks like we are good on questions. We hope everybody will join us again next Tuesday. And thank you so much, Dr. Aldrich, for presenting another fabulous webinar. If you could hang on the line for me just a minute, I'd appreciate it. And everyone else, have a wonderful night.
Thanks, everybody.